1-2, what is this? The 5-foot assassin with the roughneck business. I float like gravity, never had a cavity. Got more rhymes than the one that's got family. No need to sweat Arsenio to gain some type of fame. No shame in my game, cause I always be the same. Styles upon styles upon styles is what I have. You wanted just to fight for, but you still don't know the half. I sport New Balance sneakers to avoid a narrow path. Messing right with this against the size of the... I never have stuff, cause I'm not a half-stepper. Drink a lot of soda, so they call me Dr. Pepper.
You're listening to the Stumptown Trade Review, your online resource for independent trades and graphic novels. And today we are going to be reviewing Stitches by David Small, written by and art by. And so this is a memoir, so it's about David Small's life, and really about his childhood.
Right.
And the problems that he encounters in his childhood, and really about his family dynamic, which is a fairly strange family dynamic, but also at the same time, something that seems really common.
Yeah, I thought that it did a really good job of pointing out, I should point out the fact that David Small is, well, he's got to be post-60 now. He was born in 1945, so a lot of this takes place in the 50s and 60s and early 70s. And so what he's portraying here is sort of that idea that, you know, to the outside world, his family was just like everybody else's family, and how his family worked so hard to portray that on the outside. And then inside, once you got into their house, how what went on behind those doors was a
very
lot
cold.
Very cold house. And he does a good job showing that from his point of view, he never knew exactly what was going on. It opens with family dinner where nobody's talking, and mom is slamming cupboards, and dad is not talking, and, you know, brother isn't talking, and, you know, all these things going on, and nobody's talking. There's this real feel of anger and tension, but to the six-year-old boy, he doesn't know why.
Yeah.
And there's this fantastic piece. I know I'm jumping to the end, but the last, I think, four pages are actual family photographs.
Yeah.
And information that he has gained since the time of this book. And I think it was very important that he put that in afterwards as the adult David Small looking back.
It was a really nice reflection. After you get through his whole perspective as a child growing up through adolescence into his teen years,
right,
and then really him looking back, and it's really very brief, like what he mentions in the back.
Right. But it's that difference between what you understand as a child and what you understand as an adult. And I think he even says that it's through through maturity and some family research that he's put a lot of this together. And I like that he did that at the end. Like you said, after you've read through those, after you've just made all these discoveries along with him as a child.
And that's what this book really does well, is that it really encapsulates you in his sort of worldview as a child. And you get that feeling, that very isolated feeling. When you're a child, like, you just sort of have this bubble that kind of keeps expanding, like, the older that you get. Like, really, it's just your household when you're first growing up. And then it's kind of a couple of blocks outside of that. And it keeps expanding as you mature. And he really nails that feeling. Like, it just starts out with the dinner table. And then it kind of expands beyond that as this book grows.
Right. But the expansion still revolves around him. That there is, it doesn't ever really go too far. You don't necessarily ever really see his parents outside of when they're with him. You don't see his brother outside of when he's in the room with David. It is very, very focused on David.
No, we only see this world through his perspective.
Right. And that's important because you don't get that sort of third person omniscient narration where, you know, meanwhile in this room, this mm-hmm. is happening. And again, it goes back to that whole, we're discovering it along with him without any kind of understanding or any kind of outside influence and information.
Yeah.
What I also liked about this narrative is that it's very focused. It takes place over, you know, 25 years. And at the same time, it is very, very focused. It basically, while it revolves around his family and his family life, the tighter narration is around that idea of silence.
Yeah.
And in fact, when he actually has silence forced on him, because, and that's where the title Stitches comes from, where he has a lump removed from his throat and it takes half his vocal cords with him.
Yeah.
I just finished reading A Drifting Life, which was another memoir comic that was published this year. It's like 850 pages long. And that did not have nearly the focus of narration that Stitches does.
Uh-huh.
That Stitches is so tightly woven, so tightly focused, that every single panel tells the story a little bit more. Whereas something like A Drifting Life, which got a ton of press and a ton of publicity for it, just was lacking. That
yeah.
This had that central narration that drives the story. There's no time in this where I felt like it was dragging or wandering off course.
At the same time, though, he's also... It's not like every panel is packed with dialogue.
No.
He really lets the art breathe in this book. And there's several... There's times where you'll go 3, 4, 5 pages and there won't be any dialogue, and it's just either mood setting art or just descriptive art, and he really allows the pacing and the art to breathe in this so that it really makes for a very pleasant read.
Right. I think I saw someone had described it almost as a silent movie in places, and I thought that was a great depiction of that he really relies, because of this idea of silence, he really relies on the pictures to tell the story. And the artwork, which seems so loose, I mean, compared to the highly refined, highly detailed stuff
yeah.
that you see in a lot of mainstream comics, it's not that it's loose.
It's very descriptive. Like, the way that he shows faces...
Oh, the faces,
man,
are amazing.
The faces really are, because his mother's face, which there's a very tight focus on his mother throughout this
right.
book, and the character and the person that she was... And her face is the same throughout this whole book. You can recognize it instantly on a page, but it changes, and the character of that face and how she is feeling is so eminently expressed through the art. Like, you know at every single time what she's thinking
yep.
by the look on her face.
The art is, you know, like I said, deceptive. That it looks loose. It looks not unfinished, but unpolished.
It wasn't that I didn't like it in the beginning. I don't think that I appreciated it until
right.
about like halfway through. And then I was like, wow, this is really good. When he starts getting mm-hmm. into the meat of like mm-hmm. kind of the tension between his parents and himself, the art just really opens
right.
up and kind of explodes on the page.
You know, I almost liken it, in a sense, to like Darwin Cook's art, that, you know, and I'm thinking back to The Hunter,
mm-hmm.
that it is a very stylized art that is so different from what we're used to seeing today, and it allows for negative space to be used and the gap between the lines where,
yeah.
you know, heads are not necessarily solid, or people move in ways that, you know, seem very fluid, as opposed to making sure all their joints are in exactly the right place.
Sure. It's really more of an expressive art form as opposed to like a detailed.
That's a great way to put it.
You'll see forms where it's like a slouching figure and there's just sort of like the shading that goes through the form. And that's not a realistic perspective of that form, but it really is expressionistic.
Right. Oh, I think that's a great way to put it. That this is all about expression. And you know, the faces, it's one of the first things that I noticed about this is the face of the main character, David, who, I mean, his face is, I mean, it starts out at age 6, very innocent, very wide-eyed. And as the book goes on, you can see his anger and frustration building to...
Seething.
Yeah. I mean, really just so angry. I mean, you really think that... I mean, this is a kid who's just going to explode and go postal. I mean, really. He's going to take the whole family out.
Yeah.
And it's... Yeah. It's amazing how he's able to so well capture all these different emotions. There was never a time, you know, regardless of how many or how few words that were on this page, there was never a time where I didn't know what the character was saying through their body.
Oh, yeah.
Through the expression.
The facial expressions are just genius in this. I don't know that I've ever seen another book that depicted what people thought on their face as well as this.
Mm-hmm.
And that mother's face is amazing throughout this book. You just know at every single point in time what it is that she's thinking or feeling.
Right. You know, and one of the things I thought was so interesting, you talked about it before with the shading. The shading in this, it's not just realistic. I like your phrasing, that it's expressive. And it does a good job of conveying emotion. It does a good job of conveying weight and location and space. But it also does a fantastic job of expressing a deeper theme. I'm looking on page 213 right now, where he's at a party.
Yeah, that's a great
page. And he talks
page.
About how he's... you know, even among my old friends, I felt invisible, a shadow flickering on the edges of every event. And if you look at him in the lower left, his head is white. Everything else in him is shaded to some extent. You come to the foreground, and probably two-thirds of this picture is this couple kissing in the foreground. And the shadows, the shading actually starts in their abdomens and comes all the way up the core of their body, through their necks, and then out their mouths where they're joined, kissing. And it just goes to show how tightly connected communication is to connecting with other people.
Yeah.
Whereas he has none of that. Everybody has this shadow and shading that's coming out and interacting with other people. And like I said, these two people are completely connected at the mouth, and their shading is reaching together.
Yeah.
He has none.
Yeah.
And I just thought that, I mean, what a fantastic use of shading to express something so much deeper.
Yeah, that was a great page. The page that I liked the most was number 305. And it's might be a spoiler alert right here. But essentially, it's his mother has taken a turn for the worse and is in the hospital. And he's going to see her for probably his last time. And this is like after he's grown up and moved out and he's like, what, 25 or something?
Right.
And so it's now the tables have turned. He's learned how to talk a bit by exercising his vocal cords.
Mm-hmm.
And the first panel says, your mom has a tube down her throat and she can't talk. And then you see her in the page. On the next panel and him coming up to her, and then it's just a close-up of her in the page on the bed with like the tube down her throat, and just that face is so expressive, and you know, like,
oh man.
And I thought that was just such the pacing up until this point, that panel just blew me away when I saw it, and I was like, the book could have ended right here and I would have been satisfied, because really this whole experience has come around full circle where he's gone from the silent one to now his mother being silent. And he is now the one that's active in the relationship, and she's the one that's passive.
Right. Well, and you take a look at the face on page 305, and then you turn to page 307.
Yeah.
And how that face changes. It's clear on page 305 that she expects something from him.
Yeah.
She expects him to react in a particular way. And on 307, when she sees that he's not reacting this way, the look on her face is, I mean, it's priceless.
Confusion and not understanding the compassion and an expectation not being met. It's really, it's just amazing.
Well,
what really impressed me about this is the punch of that pacing is just the setup, and then that full 2/3 panel of the page of just that look on her face, and you're like, what's he gonna do? You know, you have no idea how he's gonna react to that. And so it made you just like want to turn the page and find out.
Well, and it, you know, it brings you back to page 170, where he's in the hospital and mom comes in to see him.
Yeah.
And so we're basically seeing that scene now from, you know, we see that scene on page 170 from his perspective.
Yeah, from the opposite perspective. Right. Him in the hospital bed.
And how they treated each other in that situation. And so now on page 305, she is now in that situation.
Yeah.
And so she's expecting it to play out the same way, because the last time they were in this and their roles were reversed and she knew everything that he
wanted.
And
it shows the switch in the generation, that he had the compassion that she didn't, and was able to portray that. And another great page was going back to where you were talking about 174, and it just shows the top panel with her face, and then the middle panel is a split panel showing half his face and half her face, which really shows how much alike they are.
Right.
Like, really, that's almost the same face, and you really see that it's a mother and a child, and they just have the same exact look on their face.
Right. I mean, we could, I mean, honestly, you could break this book down panel by panel.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And be able to stick a sticky note on each one and go, this is the emotion, this is the emotion. I mean, this is the kind of thing, you know, that artists should study. I mean, how to show this kind of emotion without having to take the shortcuts, without having to take the easy way out.
Yeah.
And you talked about how so much of this is silent. I mean, the really powerful parts of this story are the silent pieces. It's not what the people say to each other. It's how the people treat each other.
Yeah.
That's the powerful parts in this.
Well, it's really dealt with the pacing, because if you look on 225, like, the bottom panel on 225 is so expressive of anger, and it's really, you're seeing this person just explode and lose themselves, and that's so well shown. And even though there's dialogue throughout that, it's paced so well that that panel really packs a lot of punch.
Right. You know, what I liked also about the art in this was there's little hidden gems in this. There's little hidden pieces that, you know, on closer study really reveal this little, I don't know, almost playfulness that, like I said, it's missing in the overall tone. I mean, the overall tone of this is very, very serious.
Yeah.
But there is that little bit that, like I said, this is told from his point of view and his perspective at that age. And so you can see where the imagination comes in just a hair and Ben's reality. So on page 82, top panel, says Papa John had his own teeth. Grandma didn't. And it shows him and his mom and his grandparents sitting around the dinner, or probably breakfast table, whatever. And grandma's taking her teeth out and sitting them on the table. And the canine is a fang as she's taking it out. So you can see how, you know, it expresses how he's feeling about his grandma and how creepy it must be to take these teeth out. Yeah. The fact that grandma isn't the nicest person. I mean, she's definitely his mother's mother. You can see how that imagination would just kick that in a little bit. Because, I mean, grandma didn't have fangs, but, you know, how his imagination as a six-year-old boy or seven-year-old boy, however old he was at this time,
sure,
would kick it in and fill in that little notch just a little bit more. And then as an adult, later on page 299, he's talking about how he had some friends who lived in a decaying house in the Cass Corridor. On page 299, he's talking about two people who are, you know, live in the bathroom, and the guy is sitting there playing the guitar, and it's the same shape and body image as one of Picasso's famous you know, man playing guitar from the Blue Period pictures. And so again, while the guy probably didn't really look like this, you can see his, you know, view as being an artist coloring the world that he sees.
Yeah.
So that he's starting to, you know, like I said, that imagination's kicking in just a little bit, and we're not getting a exact photorealistic representation of his life. We're getting his life from his perspective and his point of view.
Yeah.
Which I think is what makes this such a powerful narrative, that it's not cut and dry. It's not all the facts in the order that they happen. They're all the facts in the order that they happen according to him.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so powerful, is that I feel like for the amount of time it took me to read this, I feel like I lived his life.
Totally. I totally agree. Just the dynamic, that the feel that you get from his family, it really touched on things, though I didn't have nearly as hard of a time with my family as his. You really, there's times I'm certain that everybody has that they can draw on, that they can, you know, insert into some of these scenes and remember tense moments that their family has that are similar to this. Mm-hmm. And he really just draws those feelings out of you so well.
Right. He really does. And, you know, there's scenes also where he revisits his youth, too. You know, page 309, as he's leaving his mom's side, he stops off in the pathology department where he had spent an adventurous night at a much younger age, and there are fetuses in a jar that had just terrified him as a child and actually terrorized him throughout his life.
Yeah.
And they've been depicted as this just creepy old man sort of thing. But when he comes back as an adult and he sees the fetus there, I actually wrote on my little note, I wrote peaceful.
Yeah.
That as an adult, he can go back and take a look at it and realize it for what it is, not what his imagination made it out to be so many years before.
Yeah.
And that's so important. Like you said, that, you know, there are elements that you may not have lived a life like this, and your family may not have been like this, but there are elements of your life that you can go, man, when I was a kid, this scared the peewaddle out of me, or this irritated me to no end. And then as an adult, you can go back, and without having all that emotion of the moment around it, you can go back and look at it and go, oh, this is what it really was.
Yeah. So what ages do you think that this would be appropriate for?
Wow. Part of me wants to give this to my parents, in the sense that my parents are roughly the same age. And my parents lived through this time.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents are coming to this point in their life where the artist is in, you know, their life. They're losing their parents. They're on their own. They have kids of their own. But part of me is like, I don't know. This is definitely an adult graphic novel. This is not one that I would recommend for kids. There's nothing in it terribly sexual. There's nothing in it, you know, I mean, yeah, there's some swearing in it, but it's more that, you know, the themes of it are adult.
Yeah. I don't think that necessarily a child would have problems with it. I think that they wouldn't fully comprehend or understand. Right. Because really, this is about him going through adolescence through to his teen years and then becoming an adult.
Yeah.
And how his relationship changes and how everything changes as he is going through that process.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think that unless you've gone through that process yourself, you can really appreciate what it is that he's doing in here.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that in order to really fully appreciate the book, you have to be your own person now. And you have to be not just living on your own, but you have to really have a true sense of who you are as an adult, free of your parents, free of your family, so that you can
go back. The institutions that you were brought up in.
So kind of like at the end, you can go back, like him in the pathology lab, and see these things for what they really were. Or else, you're going to be too mired in the middle of it, and it's not going to, like you said, you're not going to be able to fully appreciate. Not that there aren't things that anybody can get out of this and appreciate, but it's definitely something that there are very few books that I look at and go, this isn't for kids. I mean, most of the books that we read, I can look at and go, you know what, a mature teenager could read this.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, a mature middle schooler could read this. I mean, that kind of thing. And normally, you know, if they can deal with an F-bomb here or there and a little bit of nudity and some violence, most things, you know, a mature kid can handle. And, you know, this is one of the few times where I go, you know what, just the themes in this are adult.
Well, it really deals with what maturity is. Maturity isn't dealing with nudity or swearing or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's really reflecting back on your life and drawing lessons from mistakes and triumphs that you've had. Mm-hmm. And that's what this book is.
Right.
And so, because it's speaking to that, unless somebody has gone through that process, they can't.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, giving it to my parents, I mean, I think my parents would have another perspective on it because they'd be able to see it, you know, from people who lived through this time, but also now they have grown adult children.
And,
you know, it's that kind of thing where, you know, maybe, you know, 30 years from now, and when I'm my parents' age, I can look back on this book when I have my grown kids and have a whole different, you know, layer of understanding on it as well. This book definitely invites rereading in the sense, like I said, the art tells, I don't want to say a whole different story, but the art tells a story independent of the narration at times.
I would like, now that I know what the story is, I'd like to go back through and just kind of pour through the images and just kind of gather what the images are telling, as opposed to trying to gather what the story and the images are speaking of, because the visual narrative is the star of this book.
Right. You know, what I thought was also really interesting, you know, is that David Small is an illustrator. He illustrates children's books. That this is, I mean, this is really his memoir. It's not that, you know, he's a comic book writer and so he figured, oh, I'll just do my life story in comic books. He's an illustrator. I mean, I know him most famously for Imogene's Antlers, which is a kid's book probably at about the first grade level or so. He's won the Caldecott Medal, which is the highest honor that you can get for a kid's picture book. But, I mean, this is a guy who has found success and could have written a memoir.
Yeah.
But yet he chose to really do this as his memoir, as his autobiography.
Yeah.
And I found that to be really powerful that he chose this medium in which to do it, as opposed to, you know, being a comic book writer who just kind of plumbs his own childhood to tell another comic book story. Yeah. You know what I mean? Do you see the difference there?
Yeah, definitely.
That he's choosing this form in particular to do this. And I don't know that we will get another book from him like this. You know what I mean? I'm not sure that, I mean, there may be. I mean, clearly that he's lived a full life. I mean, he may have other stories to tell, but I think it's interesting that this may be the only book, the only representation that we get from David Small. And I find that very intriguing that he, you know, is going to probably go back to telling kids' stories again.
Sure, it's sort of like he just drops this in your lap and says, have fun with that, you know, and isn't going to revisit it or really revisit this medium.
Right, I mean, again. I could be wrong. I mean, he may have another one in the works for all I know.
I sure hope so, because I'll be there to read it. I'll be the first one in line, because this was excellent.
Yeah, it's just, I find it so interesting that, you know, he's known for one particular, you know, he's known for a particular medium, and then chooses something, yes, it's related, I mean, it still is illustration, but, you know, chooses a whole different approach to it to tell this.
Yeah.
And then in all likelihood, it's going to go back. I just find that so fascinating. So, I want to point out, you and I were talking about this, I never knew where to slide it in. You hate dust covers.
Yeah.
I love dust covers.
I can't stand them. I immediately, when I bring a book home, the first thing I do is take the dust jacket off, and I got a box of dust jackets.
You know, and so I was eyeing your copy, because normally a dust jacket, you know, you peel it off, and what's under it is either a blank book, or a basically just another representation of what's on the cover. What's under the dust jacket I find to be far more compelling than the dust jacket itself. It's a just black and white illustration of actually one of the interior panels. But what stands out is that face on the boy. The boy is, I mean, he is clearly angry and frustrated, and he is plotting and scheming.
Yeah, it really represents what the book is about.
Mm-hmm.
After having read it.
Yeah, I'm curious as to, you know, why that image was not chosen as the cover image for this.
It's for people like me. It's like the Easter egg.
Yeah, there you go. For the people who never peel off their dust covers, like me, I never would have known it was there. I mean, seriously, I just leave my dust covers on because I just assume
I think you'd be surprised
under.
About some of the stuff that's underneath dust jackets. Like, yeah, I find a lot of stuff that I like better than the actual
dust jacket. Eyeing your copy of The Alchemy on your shelf there. I kind of like that trade dress better than the dust jacket that was on The Alchemy. This one is $24.95. Now, I will admit, I bought mine on Amazon for like about $16.50. So, I feel like I got a steal at $16.50 for this.
Yeah.
You know, this is really a book that, like I said,
it's worth $25.
Yeah, it's worth $25. It is worth going out to your retailer. I mean, I think this is the kind of book that's, you know, that's at Powell's or you know, Barnes and Noble. You know, go
Borders.
To your local comic book shop. They'll probably have several, you know, copies there. This is a destination book.
I mean,
this is a book that not while you're at the shop, looking for something.
Yeah.
Oh, I heard about this on Stumptown. No, this is a go to the store to get this book kind of book. I mean, it's the way I felt about Asterios Polyp.
Yeah.
It is a go to the store to get this book kind of book. And if you happen to pick something else up along the way, fine, pick something else up along the way. But you must go to the store and get a copy of this book.
This has been a great year for comics.
Oh, man. This has been an outstanding year. We started talking about putting together an end of the year Because this is our first full year.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've been doing this now about a year, but this is our first full calendar year.
We're coming
up on it. We
talked
about doing, you know, an end of the year top five. I don't know if I'm going to be able to limit it to five.
I
mean, this is, you look at some of the books we've done this year, and then, I mean, you and I have also read books independent of what we've even reviewed.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I mean, top five is going to be tough. You look
really
at, I mean,
tough.
Asterius Polyp, Stitches, The Alchemy. I mean, there have been some
Ball Peen Hammer.
There have been some amazing books that have come out this year that, you know, as I sit back and look at it, go, wow, it has been a fantastic year for books. And I look at how I felt at the end of last year, or, you know, middle to end of last year, when I was giving up my month-to-month buying of comics. And I was pretty down on comics, to tell you the truth. I really was. And this year has really opened my eyes to just...
I totally agree.
...quality stuff that's being published outside...
That you miss because you're so stuck in that Marvel or DC world, you know?
Well, and when you're spending the amount of money I was spending on comics... I couldn't afford to try anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, I was spending, I mean, ridiculous amount of money on comics. I won't even say how much it is for fear that my wife might actually listen to this and find out. But, I mean, I couldn't afford to drop $25 on a book that I might or might not like.
I feel like with the quality of books that we've gotten this year, like, it hasn't been all that risky. I feel like most of the books that we've had were at least decent, and most were high quality that
really?
We've had.
Yeah, I think we have sampled far more books that we have enjoyed than what we haven't enjoyed. And some of them have been really pleasant surprises. I mean, Stitches was one that you pushed heavily for me to read. This was one of your choices for us to read. And, you know, I mean, to say pleasantly surprised is an understatement, that I didn't know a whole lot about this book coming into it, other than, you know, some people had said, this is a good book, you should read it. I'm not exactly sure how you came to be aware of it, but, I mean, I am so pleased that this ended up on my reading list.
Yeah, definitely.
And I sincerely hope that other people find this book and have the same kind of experience reading it that we did.
Yeah, it was one of the best books of this year.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah, fantastic book. So, you've been listening to Stumptown Trade Review, your online resource for independent trades and comics. If you have enjoyed what you have heard, stop by the website, stumptowntradereview.com, leave us some feedback, go to iTunes, drop some feedback there on iTunes. You can also find us on the Comics Podcast Network, home of other fantastic comics podcasts. Let us know what you like. Give us some feedback. Let us know what you'd like to hear from us. Give us some reviews so that other people can read the reviews and say, hey, we'll try these guys out. Until next time. With BS competition, your name is special, so won't you suckle with the mission? I never walk the street, think it's all about me. Even though deep in my heart, it really could be. I just try my best to like go all out. Some might even say you're shorty black, you're bugging out. Zulu Nation, mother's last creation, minds get flooded. Ejaculation right on the 2-inch tape. The abstract poet incognito runs the cape, not the best, not the worst. And occasionally I curse to get my point across. So bust the force as I go in between the grit and the dirt. Listen to the mission, listen, missions I do work. As I crack the monotone, chilling up the jazz, so get your own. Smoking R&B because they try to dupe me or the best of the back, but they can't do rap for us. Abstract, original, you can't get your own, and that's pitiful. I know I'd be the man if I cold yank the plug on R&B, but I can't, and that's bug.
action. Sometimes you're doing it just for mere satisfaction. People be hounding, always surrounding, posting, just like a migraine pounding. You don't really fret, you stay in your sense, camouflage your feeling of absolute tense. You're so off to another world deep in your mind, for people seem to take that as being unkind. Oh yo, he's acting stank, really on a regal, a man of the fame, not a man of the people. Believe that if you wanna, but I tell you this much, riding on the train with no dough sucks. Once again, a case of your feet in my Nikes. If a crowd is in my room, I'll say, Mike, please. Hip-hop is living. Can't yank the plug. If you do, the result will end up kind of bald.
I am not an invalid, although I used to smoke the weed out. Ali Shaheed Muhammad used to say I had to be out. Steaming on the 50s with the crazy booming back buns. Pushing on the real hard just so we can have the big fun. When I left Marusi, I was Boulevard status. Battling the MC was when Tip was at his maddest. It was one MC after one MC. What the world could they be wanting? See from little old me. Do I have the formula to save the world? Or was it just because I used to smoke the women and all the girls? I'm the type of brother with the crazy extended hand, kid. This by all my brothers, I was all up with my man did. Supposed to be my man, but now I wonder cause you're feeble. I go out with the strongies and I separate the eagles. It's your brain against my mind. My nose about to boot out. Or your nasty kid is, even though you see I bug out.